Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Road to Revolution podcast, my journey with Linkin Park. And today is the big episode, everybody. Now, it's not the last episode. There are more episodes after this. As I've mentioned in previous episodes, we're going to talk about a lot of shows. And when we get to the end of the Linkin Park shows, we're going to talk about other shows. Because I have a lot of shows, as I've mentioned. But we're not going to talk about the other shows today. Today, we have more than enough to talk about one show in particular, and that is my 14th Linkin Park show. Now, this one took place at the Tweeter Center at the Waterfront in Camden, New Jersey on August 3rd, 2004. I went to the show with my friend Henry, who I believe up until that point, he'd been to many concerts with me, but I don't believe he had seen Linkin Park with me yet. So he was super excited because he loved Linkin Park as much as I did. Well, I don't know about as much as I did, but he loved Linkin Park a lot. So we drove down to the show together and we had a grand old time driving down and joking and talking and stuff. Camden was just outside of Philadelphia, so it was about 2 hours away from New York. So we had a good drive ahead of us on the way there, but it was nice. It was fun. And we get to the venue, and this was the second show so far on this tour that we had general admission tickets. So we're in the pit. And after how great Boston went being up front, I was like, if I'm in the pit from now on for a Linkin Park show, I'm going to be up front. I can't not do that. Like, we need to. So we got there early, and same lineup of characters that we'd been seeing at the shows. My buddy Sal was there. We met up with him. And then our friends, Brian and Jason, who we'd seen at other shows as well, they were in line with Sal too. So we were all kind of hanging out there. We also met some new friends in line that day named Julie and April, who ended up being a very important part of this show, this concert specifically. Hours just waiting in the lobby area of the venue until it was time for us to go inside into the pit and, be on the rail for showtime. So we'll start with the show itself. The set list, same exact show that they did in Boston and Hartford and New York. Nothing really changed there. Jersey was the exception a few days earlier with the Jay-Z stuff, but other than that, the set lists were the same. But this one had a huge, huge difference than the other shows, and then from any other show on this summer tour. They brought somebody up to play guitar on Faint. Now, based on things I've said on past episodes and leading up to this episode, you might have been able to piece together that that person was me. They brought me up to play guitar on Faint. But we're going to tell the whole story about how we got to that part because I didn't initially get picked. It wasn't me. So let's start the whole process of that. So the concert's going great. Less than Jake was great. Korn, Snoop Dogg, The Used, all awesome. Snoop Dogg was Snoop Dogg. At this point, we were just tired of him. Like, this is the fifth show I'd been to on this tour. I was just done with it. Like, he was just so dull at this point. Everything was repetitive. Even Korn was starting to get repetitive. Like, I love Korn, but their in between song banter was very rehearsed, down to the point where between every song they would say the same things in different cities. So it was getting a little repetitive. They're still great performance wise. Like, their show was awesome, but when you go to that many shows on a tour and you start to see maybe why people don't do this, for whatever reason, I was ready to not see Korn or Snoop Dogg for a bit after this tour. But they all play, and now we're ready for Linkin Park, and they come out, and the show is awesome. Like, they start playing, the same set, but it doesn't matter. Like, the set was explosive, and it was high energy and just so much fun. So we get up to about three quarters of the way through the show, and Mike says, "We're going to do something we haven't done in a little bit. Who knows how to play guitar?" And of course, a million people in the crowd throw their hands up. So he's like, no, stop, stop, stop. Only keep your hand up if you're serious. Like, if you know how to play guitar, like, don't come up here and make yourself look stupid. Like, if you know how to play guitar, keep your hand up for real. So they pick my friend Jason, who I mentioned earlier. And I had experienced two emotions at that point. One, just complete and utter disappointment, because as I mentioned in an earlier episode from New York, the Uniondale episode, I didn't get picked there, and they were picking a kid every night on that tour, and they didn't pick me in New York, and I was just devastated because we were pretty close to the stage, and I already knew the song, so I was like, I need to do this, and they didn't pick me, so I was bummed. So again, now second time they've done this, and this thing was even something not even in my mind anymore. Like, I wasn't even thinking they were going to do it. When I went to the Boston show, I was thinking, oh, maybe they will, because you know they did the whole last tour, but they hadn't done it at all on the summer tour. So when they picked Jason, I was a bit just heartbroken because I was like, oh, man, I don't know if they'll do this again on this tour. I don't know if I'm ever going to get this chance again. So as you know, understandably, but also, you know, a bit selfishly, I was just heartbroken over it. But at the same time, I knew Jason at this point. I'd met him at the other shows. And Jason was a nice guy, is a nice guy. So seeing him up there, I was happy for him, but also just sad because I was like, man, could have been me. Almost was. I was up front. I was right there, but they picked him. Okay. So he gets up there and they're going through the whole thing like, hey, you know, what's your name? No, my name's Jason. Play the part of the song. And Brad goes to show him and he starts playing it. But for some reason, he's playing the rhythm part. And Mike says, no, anybody can play that part. That's why I play that part. We're looking for someone who could play this part. And it's the lead. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, the rhythm part, the part that Mike plays on Fane, is the kind of bar chords, the and forgive how terrible that sounded. I'm sorry. That's horrible podcasting right there. But what they wanted was the lead, which is much more easier to mimic with my voice, and it'll sound better on a podcast. At least I think we'll find out. But the lead part is the, so that's the lead part. And I knew both, but the lead part's more fun to play because there's more. I don't want to say there's more to do, but it sounds cooler. It's a bit more fun. I don't know. I don't know the explanation why it is, but it is. So we start playing the rhythm part, and Mike's like, no. And that's not what we're, I'm going to play that part. That's the easy part. We want someone to play the lead part. So instead of giving him another chance, and I guess it was so the universe was giving me another chance, they kick him off stage. They say, no, you tried, you failed. Sorry. In so many words. And they kicked him off, and Mike is saying, all right, Brad, let's find somebody. And before he could even finish that thought, Brad is pointing at me and he's like, you get up here. And I'm in utter shock, but it's happening. So I hop over the barricade. Security helps me up onto the stage, in which I'm so glad that there's at least no video of this part, because I rolled onto the stage. Like, legit, like, security helped lift my feet up, and I just, like, rolled on my side onto the stage. It looked terrible. I don't know if it looked terrible because I didn't see it, but I felt dumb rolling onto the stage in front of what I think was 20 something thousand people. So I get up there and I'm hyped. I'm like, I feel like Uma Thurman in Pulp Fiction, man. Like, I feel like someone just stabbed me in the heart with adrenaline, because I'm running on every bit of energy that's flowing through my body right now. I'm just like, I'm pumped. I'm just so stoked. And Brad puts the guitar on me, and Mike's like, what's your name? I'm like, Billy. He's like, all right, say what's, everybody, this is Billy. And I start playing the part, and he's like, all right, hey, we got a winner. Billy's going to play this shit. So we start the song. Oh, I shouldn't say we. Johan starts the synth to start the song, and then we as a band start playing it. Now, just before all that happens, Brad is whispering a few things to me, just saying like, hey, just want to make sure you know the other parts of the song. Like, it's not just the chorus. No, not just the verse. I said, no, I know the chorus. I know the breakdown. Like, I'm good. He's like, okay. So he also says, don't worry about the controls or the effects. I'll control all those from the other side of the stage. You just play. Just play the part. Don't worry about the knobs or anything or the pedals. I got that. I said, okay. And he's like, otherwise, just make me proud. And I was just like, I will. I'm just like blown away at this point. Like, for a brief few moments in time, I am part of Linkin Park, my favorite band ever. The band who 3 years earlier, when I got backstage at their show, fantasized about them saying, hey, do you want to play One Step Closer with us? And you know, obviously that didn't happen, but now it was really happening. Different song, but same, similar scenario. But now I'm up there and I'm looking out at the crowd and there are, like I said, probably about 20 something thousand people there. But because of the lighting, I could only see the first couple of rows. So maybe I saw a couple of hundred, maybe a thousand total. So I wasn't freaking out as much as I probably should have been, but because I'd been in a band myself and my band at the time, Pyromyth, we'd played shows for some fairly big crowds. Like we played the Battle of the Bands at all of our respective high schools, and which resulted in some good crowds of a couple hundred people. So we were, I don't want to say I was used to playing in front of that many people, but it didn't bother me. So suddenly being in front of 20,000 people with my favorite band, it should have been the most nerve-wracking moment of my life, but it wasn't. And I don't know, maybe that's a whole sign of it was supposed to happen. It was destined to happen. I don't know, but it happened. And we play the whole song, and well, I'm not going to jump to the end of the song because there's stuff during the song that I remember and want to talk about. So one thing was I realized in the first bit of the song, I was just standing there because I didn't know what to do. I just wanted to play and I didn't want to mess it up. But once you get into the first verse, I was like, I want to move around a little bit. And now anyone who's been to a Linkin Park show in the early years and towards the later years as well, but in the early years, these were like a staple of their show. They had these things called what fans called the Linkin boxes. They were these like metal crate kind of looking things on the front of the stage that would typically cover their monitors so they can hear their own audio on stage. But for the early years, they had their logos on them, like the Arrow logo, the LP backwards logo. Like they had four logos early on, and those were on the front of these boxes. And during the first verse, I looked at it and I was like, I'm gonna get up on one of these things. Cause like all the band members, minus Joe and Rob, they would stand on them. Like they would jump up on them and, you know, kind of be a little elevated. And it was a cool thing. But I was like, I'm gonna do it. I'm getting on one of these things. So there's one almost directly in front of me. I was like, that's the one, I'm jumping on it. And jump is a funny term to use. Cause I did not jump, especially if you see the video. I gingerly stepped onto it and gracefully is not a term I would use. But I got up on this thing, but right before I did that, or it might've been right after, I have to check the video, but I realized I wasn't playing part of the verse. And wasn't because I didn't know it or forgot. It was, I thought it was part of the rhythm track. So I thought it was something Mike did. So, and by the only rhythm you might be thinking, if you're thinking of the song, what guitar is there in the verse? And it's, at the very beginning of each section of the verse, there's just quick two little guitar hits. They're like, dun-dun. And then towards the end of the verse, it builds up a little bit with a few extra notes. And then that's pretty much the verse on the guitar on that song. So I forgot for the first one. So Brad ran over and was like, hey, don't forget, you know, you got to do the open strums, during the verse. Said, okay, no problem. He's like, you know him? I say, yeah. So I started playing him and then all was good, but I'm up on this thing and there's a moment during the show at one point where I look over and the other guys are on their boxes as well. And like Chester's on one and Mike was on one and Dave Phoenix was on one. And that was the big surreal moment, not looking out at the crowd, but standing on the stage playing this song that I'd played in my bedroom for nobody, you know, to a closed door bedroom where it was just me and my stereo on blasting the song and me playing along on my guitar. Suddenly I'm doing that in front of 20,000 people. But all that mattered was I looked over and there was Chester and there was Mike and there was Dave. And I could see Brad in the corner and Joe and Rob are behind me. And I'm a part of this now. Like this is a literal dream coming true. And that's the thing I still think about now that blows my mind is I looked over and for a brief moment, I wasn't a fan anymore. For 3+ minutes, I was part of that. I was the guitarist playing with that band, which was just amazing. And yes, there is one point and if you watch the video, you'll see what I'm talking about, where Chester calls me Jason. He probably just mixed my name and his up. And years later, Chester went on to know who I was and knew my name and remembered me at shows and things like that. So I don't think anything of that. There's a lot of people online who are like, why do you call you Jason? Because the dude before me, his name was Jason. That's why. But it was just this surreal thing. And jumping back to getting picked, a big part of why I got picked was the people that I was with. I was screaming my head off, but everyone that was with me, Julie and April were next to us, and my friend Henry was next to us. And when Jason messed up or played the wrong part and they were getting ready to pick somebody else, they all screamed as loud as they could for me. And I can never thank any of them enough for that, because I don't know if I'd get up there without them. Like, the band had started to recognize me at that point, but I don't know how much of them picking me was that, and how much of it was all these people and my friends around me cheering and pointing at me. I genuinely don't know what it was, but the fact that they helped so much was huge, and I owe them so much. And at the very least, an insanely huge thank you for that, because me getting up there might not have even happened if it weren't for them. Here's a fun little side story about Julie. Well, not so much about Julie, but about her business card. After the show, she had given me her business card so we could keep in touch via email and stuff. And if we were going to future shows, we would like meet up and go together and stuff, which we did. There was a bunch of New York and New Jersey Linkin Park shows that Sal and I had met up with Julie and or April for a while, which was really cool. But specifically, I had her business card in my wallet, because I, at that point, I think she gave me the card in August. And after I took her email and stuff down into my computer, I think I put the card right back in there and forgot it was there. So fast forward to, I want to say September of that year. It might've been December, some point in the September to December months. I generally don't remember when anymore. I was in the Virgin Megastore in New York City, down in the Union Square in the Village area. And I was looking at the movies, because I'm a big movie collector. Like, when I lived up in New York, I had 1,000+ DVDs and 100 to 200 Blu-rays. So I used to collect movies, not so much anymore just because of space and, you know, digital and streaming has changed that, but I used to collect movies. So I'd go into the Virgin Megastore all the time and try to see what new DVDs or movies they had. And while I was there one day, I ran into Sarah Silverman, the comedian slash actress. And I didn't really met many celebrities just out and about. If I had met anybody, it was at a convention or at a meet and greet or a concert. So I didn't know, like, should I say something to her? And I was like, you know what? I've never seen anybody in public. I'm just going to go say hi. So I go up to her. I'm like, hey, I'm sorry to bother you. Just want to say I'm a fan of yours. I just want to say hello. She's like, oh, that's so nice. Thank you so much. And then I was like, before even thinking, I was like, can I ask you to sign something? She's like, oh, yeah, sure. So I realized I didn't have anything. And I was like, oh, shit. Well, I go grab my wallet and I open up. The only thing that's like paper or that's signable in there is Julie's business card. So I was like, oh, I just really, I only have this. She's like, I'll sign that. That's no problem. And she signs this business card, and it's still in a box, I think, at my mom's to this day. And all it says is, to Billy, who's Julie? ? Sarah Silverman. And I always found that so funny. And I think I've told Julie that story. And if I haven't, well, if you're listening to this, now you know. But it's just a fun little side story. So back to the show itself. So we finished the song, and I'm on cloud nine for the rest of the night. I'm just my brain's mush. It's like I can't process or fathom anything at this point. But it's over. I'm walking off the stage, and they gave me Rob's drumsticks, all the guitar picks that were used, and then their tour manager or stage manager talked to me for a few minutes after the song, and he was like, hey, man, you did great up there. He's like, we brought kids up every night on tour back in the spring, and you just crushed it. You're one of the best we brought up. And he might have been blowing smoke up at my ass. I don't know. But I like to believe he was telling the truth. But whatever it was, I'm appreciative of his words, because they made me feel even better than I already did at that moment. And there was a moment of uncertainty where I was like, do I get to like stay up here and watch the rest of the show from the side of the stage? Because I'd seen some bands do that in the past where they bring somebody up to play. Like, it was Green Day, I think, did that. And they like gave them the guitar, they gave them the bass, and then they got to watch the whole rest of the show from the side of the stage. That didn't happen here. he was like, all right, cool. Thank you so much for doing this. You were great. I said, oh, thank you. And then they escorted me back out in the guest portion of the venue. And I'm just on cloud nine. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to go walk into the back of the pit area. Like, I'm not going to try to fight my way up. It's going to be stupid to do that. So, and I'm fine. Like, I was just on stage. I don't need to be back in the front row. Like, I'll just stand in the back until the show's over, and then I'll meet up with Henry, and then we'll get out of there. So I get into the back of the pit area, and I see Henry. No, I don't see Henry yet. Sorry, jumping ahead of myself. I get into the back of the pit area, and the crowd starts to realize who I was, and they were like, oh no, go back up there. And like, and I'm not even exaggerating or lying. People like made a path, like just parted the Red Sea. And I was able to just walk literally right up to my spot on the rail, like no problem whatsoever. Like the most surreal thing, like even more surreal than what just happened on stage. I couldn't believe that. Like everyone just made a path. I walked right up next to Henry and I'm like, oh, hey, he's like, how the hell did you get back up here? I was like, dude, I don't know. No idea. So the rest of the show goes on and I'm like still on cloud nine, just absolutely losing my mind based on what happened. And still I'm back up here watching the show with one of my best friends in the world. And the rest of the show's end wrapping up. Phoenix sees me because where we were for that show, we were kind of right in front of where Phoenix would stay, where his setup was on stage. So towards the end of the show, he looks down and he sees me down there and does like a quick double take, like, what, how you were just a, how'd you get back there? Like he didn't understand how I got back to the front row. And I mean, honestly, neither did I. But end of the show wraps up. He comes down and he gives me he had a wristband from this company called Tribal, which was a big company around that time. And I'm imagining they were a sponsor of the band or something, but he gave me his wristband from that night. So I walked away with a bunch of really cool little mementos from that night, aside from the memories, which was amazing. And then as we're leaving the show that night, people are stopping us, asking for autographs. I mean, I signed tickets, I signed posters, I signed people. It was so weird. Like I'd signed CDs with my band and most of them were friends who were asking for that. But this was weird. Like people I don't know at this venue in Jersey were like, hey, sign this. Hey, sign this. Like I signed somebody's arm. I signed everything, anything people had. I was like, yeah, I mean, why not? Sure. I technically was a part of the show, but it was crazy. It was such a weird thing for me to do, but it was cool. It was a really weird experience to do that. One of the downsides, though, of this happening during that moment in time was it was 2004. And I don't know how old the audience of this show is, but back in 2004, cell phones were not great. Like they worked for their initial purpose to call and maybe text people. That was it. Like phones, how we know them today, were not a thing back in 2004. So like there weren't great cameras on them. Most phones didn't even have cameras yet. And if they did, they were bad. The batteries on the phones were crap. They would die. If your phone had a camera, the battery would die like crazy. If it didn't have a camera, your battery would last for like 9 years. YouTube wasn't really a thing yet. Like I think it had just started. It was about to start, but it wasn't prominent. So like people weren't going to a show and immediately loading videos up there. And people weren't widely carrying around point and shoot cameras yet either. So a lot of them were like professional cameras, which were a pain to bring into shows, or like small disposables, which took really crappy little pictures, especially if you were further back. If you were close, you might get some good ones. Like I was talking about during the Jay-Z Linkin Park stuff a few days ago. But now, you know, you can't imagine that scenario happening and not having any footage or video or pictures, but we didn't. There was nothing from the show. Henry had a camera phone with him, but you know, by the time Linkin Park went on, it was 9:30. So we didn't have any battery left by that point. So I had no proof really that this happened. Aside from the few friends I knew at that show, like having the show be 2 hours away from home, I didn't really know anybody there aside from Henry and Sal and Julie and April and Brian and Jason. And none of them had camera phones or none of them had battery left and nobody had any pictures or video. So I had like maybe six other people that could say, yeah, that really happened. But other than that, it was like, you know, it's like telling an urban legend. So, I mean, the good part was I knew it happened and I had the memory of that, which was worth more than anything else. So, you know, it sucked not having any footage or pictures to be like, hey, look at this. But I knew it happened. I had those memories that I still cherish to this very day. Now, fast forward to in February, I want to say February or March of 2005, I go to a concert at the Starland Ballroom in New Jersey. I think it was Chevelle. And I'd gotten there early to get a good spot up front. And, you know, when you get there early, you talk to the other people in line to pass the time. And, you know, you're all there for the same reason. So typically you do have some common interests. So it's easy to make friends like that. And I start talking to this girl who's in line. And we start talking about other bands we've seen. I said, oh, Linkin Park's my favorite band overall. I've seen them, you know, 16 times at that point. And I actually got to play with them last summer. She's like, oh my God, what show? I said, oh, in Camden, New Jersey. She's like, I was at that show. I have a picture of you. And I'm just like, everyone else shut up. Like, are you serious? Like, I didn't know anything existed from that show, but you're telling me right now you have something. She's like, yeah. Give me your email. I'll send it to you when I get home. I said, oh my God, you are the greatest person I ever live right now. So I give her my email address. And at this point I'm like, screw Chevelle. I don't even care. I want to go right home and get this picture. Like, I'm just so sidetracked and unfocused on the concert at hand, which ended up being a great show. Chevelle was always great live, and they still are. I saw them just a couple of months ago here down in Orlando, and they're still an amazing show. But at that point, I just wanted this picture. So I get home that night, and of course, she's not going to send it that night. So I wake up the next day, and I do have an email. And it's from the girl, and she's like, hey, great meeting you last night. Here's the picture from the Linkin Park show. And I'm like, all right, here it is. Moment of truth. And I download it, and it's not a bad picture. Like, I am in it. It is clear that it is me, and it is clear that I'm playing guitar. But there's nothing else in this picture to describe or depict that I am A, with Linkin Park, B, on a big stage with like their kind of really cool setup in a big venue or anything like that. It looks like it could have been taken in a warehouse somewhere. I'm the only thing in the picture, and maybe there's some lights. That's it. So I'm so grateful she sent me the picture, because I up until that point, I had nothing. So this was something. So I was very grateful for that. But it's not like I could take this picture and show it to somebody and say, hey, look, I played with Linkin Park. They're like, oh, well, where's Linkin Park? This is just a picture of you. So I hate to use the word disappointed, because she didn't, you know, it's not like she went out to take a picture of just me. She took pictures during the show, and that was it. And this is the only one she had that I was in. So I'm very, very grateful. Just, I was disappointed at that point, because I had set my expectations higher for that picture, but very, very grateful she sent it. So now we're going to fast forward again to 2010. I want to say it's either the night before Thanksgiving or Thanksgiving night. I get an email from one of the guys at LP Live. I think it was Mark, I believe, sent me an email that night saying, hey, you're Billy, right? The guy who played with Linkin Park in Camden. I said, yeah. He said, listen, we found out that there's video from that show, and we're working on getting it. Once we get it, I'll let you know, and I'll send you the footage. And I'm just like, it has been over 6 years. And I went on the notion of thinking nothing from the show existed. And suddenly you're telling me that not only is there a chance it exists, it does exist, and we're working on getting it. I'm just blown away. Like, suddenly I'm as giddy as a kid on Christmas Eve, and I'm like, I'm hopeful. I'm like, oh my God, I'm finally going to get to see this. Now, based on how the picture thing in 2005 went, I had to start setting my expectations low, because I knew what was going to happen was I would get so excited, and then I would get the footage, and it would be somebody in the 50th row with a camera phone that all we look like are pixels and you can't tell. So I was like trying to set my expectations a reasonably low level. So I'm like, all right, whatever I get, I'll be happy about, but I have to make sure I'm not overselling this to myself. But I thank him so much. I'm like, hey, this is amazing. I have seen only one picture, and this was it. So I was like, I can't wait. You know, just let me know when you get something in. And dude, thank you so much. And that was November of 2010. And I go for a little bit and I check in with Mark every once in a while. I was like, we're still working on it. We haven't gotten it yet. We're still working on it though. Don't worry. I said, okay. So then April 1st, 2011, I get an email again from Mark saying, hey man, we got it. Like we're putting up a teaser video tomorrow night, but here's the teaser. And he sends me the teaser and it's like a minute or 40 seconds long. And in that video there's clear as day footage of me playing guitar with them. And I'm just overjoyed. I'm overcome with emotion because I thought there's something I'd never see. But all of a sudden I realized something watching this video. This was a professionally shot video with soundboard quality audio. So if there's anything in the universe further away from the picture of just me and nobody else, or having nothing at all, it was getting a professionally shot multi-camera video with soundboard mix audio. And this is what we got. So I'm just like losing my mind. Like, oh my God, I'm going to have, like, for 2004, I'm going to have the best quality footage I could possibly have. And it was a couple of days later on April 6th, they posted the full show. And it's still on YouTube to this day, which is absolutely insane, because if you go on there, and this is the truth, you can try it yourself. If you go on to YouTube and you search for Linkin Park Faint, I want to say I'm like the fourth or fifth video that comes up, which is just insane. Like, that's one of their huge songs. Like, most people know that song. If not by name, they know it when you like play it for them. Like, oh yeah, I know that song. So the fact that if you just search just that song, like don't type in Camden, don't type in 2004, just type in Linkin Park Faint, and it's typically the fourth or fifth thing that comes up, which is absolutely insane to me. It's mind blowing still, and it's been almost 16 years since that concert. One of the weird kind of aftermath / side effect things that came with that show and that video was being recognized at places. One in particular that always stuck out because I didn't expect it, because it was 10 years after the fact that it happened, was we're at the Linkin Park rehearsal for the Carnivores tour in West Palm Beach in August of 2014. And as we're leaving, these two guys who were at the rehearsal walk out to me. It's like, hey, are you Billy? And I said, yeah. They're like, we saw your video. We've seen your video tons of times. You know, that's so cool. Like, it's cool to meet you. And I was like, oh my God, thank you so much. Like, that's really awesome. Like, thank you for saying that. Thanks for coming up to me. And I always thought that was weird. Like, I didn't think that would happen. So people recognize me and, you know, outside in public, especially, you know, many, many states away. Like, this show happened in New Jersey, right near Pennsylvania, like that border area. So for these dudes to recognize me in West Palm Beach was just crazy to me. Like, I just thought, was blown away by it. Another weird kind of little side effect bit from that show is, as of today, and I'm recording this on April the 4th, there's been several uploads of that video now. LP Live has uploaded one. A couple of random Facebook pages have uploaded one. A random dude on YouTube's also uploaded it. Between like the big four or five postings of this video, the video of me playing with them has been seen by over 18 million people. Like, that's, of all of this, that's the thing that blows my mind the most, because just the idea or the notion that, all right, let's say out of that 18 million, you know, half are the same person. They watched it multiple times. So let's call it 10 million. 10 million people are at least aware that I exist. That's insane to me in the coolest way. Because by no means am I a known person. I'm not a celebrity. I'm not famous. I'm a normal person with a normal job in Florida and a fairly normal life. Some people I know would argue I don't have a normal life. I do more ridiculous things, but I would argue I do have a fairly normal life. And to know that there's if let's take the number as it is at 18 million, to know that there's been 18 million people who viewed this video is almost humbling. It's just such a weird thing to think about in the greatest way. So for every single person who have ever watched that video, I cannot thank you enough. Because all you watching that video, all you're doing is making the greatest video, the greatest moment of my life live on further. And it's just something I'll never, ever forget. And thanks to the video and now me recording this podcast, it's never going to be forgotten. You know, it's recorded in multiple ways and multiple formats. And, you know, for years when I was younger, I knew it was a story I'd never forget, but I was so worried that the only thing I would have of it is the story. But now, thanks to, you know, there's a few random people to thank for that. It's thanks to the LP Live guys who went out of their way to track down this show. And granted, their motives were not to get me the video. Their motives were to get a rare show to host on their site, which they did, and they knocked it out of the park. Like, hey, that's an amazing show with an amazing set list, and it's amazing quality. Like, it looks great. It sounds fantastic for a bootleg show because it wasn't an official mix. It wasn't an official release by the band or anything like that. But that leads into another weird thank you. Whoever worked at that venue that decided, hey, I'm a leak stuff. Like, you're a fucking legend, man. And if you've listened to this show, you know I don't like to curse too much on this show just because I was raised in a way that I hate cursing in a way that my parents could hear. I don't know. It was just something. I was raised very Catholic and strict Catholic, so I always felt weird doing that in a way that someone in my family could hear me say something dirty. I had a side note to that. I had this weird, I don't want to say fantasy, but this weird like daydream when I was younger that if I was in a band, I was so nervous about being in a band because I would want my whole family to be able to listen to it. But I also didn't want to be lame and not have like bad words in my songs. So I always thought about like, man, what if I made a song that had the F word in it and my grandma listened to it? I'd feel so bad about that. But weird side tangent. But to the dude who leaked this, like, you're amazing, man. Like, I'm sure you might have had ulterior motives or somebody might have paid you for it, but you know, 6 years after the fact, you made this one kid's dream even better, because not only did it happen, but now I have like the greatest quality video I could have gotten to commemorate this thing forever. And the timing of it was insane too, because when I got it, I was working on a project in college with another guy. It was for a class called TV Radio Documentary, where you could either do an audio interview with somebody or you could do like a video interview for like a documentary style thing. So the one I did, or I was the subject of, because basically you had to pair up with a partner and your partner was your subject. So the subject for mine was the guy asked me, what's the most memorable moment of your life? And naturally, hands down, I talked about this show. And when we started it, it was before April of 2011. So I didn't have anything. Like, I had the picture and that's all I had. And I didn't know when we were going to get the video. So I didn't even want to mention it or if we were going to get the video, because I still didn't know when yet. So I was treating it as a pipe dream. But I said, hey, I have a picture. He said, all right, picture works. And then we'll just have you talk and we'll tell the story. I said, okay. So we filmed everything with me talking. And I gave him the picture and we took pictures and video of like other memorabilia, like the ticket stub and the drumsticks and the guitar picks and the wristband and stuff. So it came out to be this nice little piece. And then about 2 weeks before it was due, I got the video from LP Live. So I called this dude up and me was like, dude, I don't know how much is done or if you still need to work on it, but I got the video. He's like, you what? I was like, I got the video from the show. Like, I have it. He's like, oh my God, send it over. And he was able to recut it and put the video in. And it kind of turned into this weird little thing where I was like, hey, here's our project we've been working on. But also on a selfish personal level, I get to show everyone in my class this video of the greatest moment of my life. So I'm like, kind of cool. It's like kind of like show and tell, but for adults, like, hey, watch my dreams literally come true in this video right now, which was awesome. But it's, you know, that guy who leaked it, like, And I'm pretty sure it's the same person or the same crew, because earlier in that summer, a Blink-182 show from that same venue had leaked. Same deal, board audio, venue cameras. So thank you to whoever you or you, that crew is, because you guys made one of the best moments of my life even better, because now I can watch it over and over. And in my job now, I meet new people fairly often. And a little while later, if somebody mentions, oh, hey, Billy played with Linkin Park. Like, oh, how come you never mentioned that? I was like, I don't know. It's a weird thing to mention out of nowhere. Like, if it comes up in conversation, yeah. But some people are like, no, you should just be like, hey, how you doing? I'm Billy. By the way, I played with Linkin Park. And I'm like, I can't do that. Like, it's such a weird thing to bring up like that. Like, the furthest I'll get with that is every year on the anniversary, I'll post the video and I'll get shit from friends. Like, oh, you're going to post the video again? It's like, yes, I'm going to post the video again. Do you celebrate your kid's birthday every year? Okay, that's a weird comparison. But like, it's the greatest moment of my life. Much like how people who have kids, like, that date is a forever great moment for them. You know, this is a great moment for me. So I'm always going to share the video on that day because it's the greatest moment of my life. And I don't have kids yet, so don't say that, oh, he says it's better than his own kids. I don't have kids yet, so I can't say that yet. I'm sure when I have kids, they will be the greatest thing in my life. But until then, this dream coming true back in 2004 was and still is to this day the greatest moment of my life. Can't even say the thing right. I feel like an idiot. But that's what happens when I've been talking about this for like 45 minutes. So I think that's a great stopping point, because it's longer than any of our other episodes like combined at this point. So I will wrap things up. If you have survived this 45-minute long episode, I thank you so much for listening. This one was a special one to me. So it might get a little sloppy and rambly at points, but this one was and still is the greatest moment of my life. So I kind of, once I start talking about it, I can't stop. So I have to stop, because if I don't, it's just going to get weird and rambly. So with that, I thank you so much for listening. This has been My Road to Revolution. My name is Billy. Thank you so much.